Hello, and welcome to the Game Audio Hour, a fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things game audio, from creative ideas to the latest techniques, project experiences to audio secrets. Here is where you'll find in-depth coverage and opinions related to game audio. This is episode 242. I'm going to move this Unity window out of the way. This is stupid. I do not need to think about Unity right now. I'm just going to focus on this conversation because, hey, this should be fun. My name is Vincent Diamante, and I'm hanging out with the usual Game Audio Hour trio here. Let's go in order of distance, which means Mike. Mike, how are you doing?
I am doing splendidly. If Los Angeles could be said to have four seasons, neutral, air conditioner, heater, and fan, I've moved from neutral into fan.
Ooh, excellent. I'm a big fan of that. This is a nice time of year, isn't it?
Well done. I see what you did there, Vince.
Expert double entendre. Well done.
Oh, man. Wait a minute. Who's that? I didn't introduce you yet. I'll go ahead and do that right now. It's Alex. Hi, Alex. How are you doing?
Sorry, just jumping the gun there. I'm okay. I'm a little tired because I've just returned from an exotic location, which you can ask me about shortly. I'm doing pretty well. And how are you, Vince?
I'm doing good, except I just knee deep in Unity. It's actually been fun for the last few weeks, just making game audio happen, and I don't know, I suppose we could talk about that eventually. I'm more excited in this exotic locale that you mentioned. What's up with that?
Yes, this week I have been in Croatia, in the southern tip of Croatia, in a town called Dubrovnik, and Dubrovnik is the yearly host of Reboot Develop Blue, which is a game developer-focused conference. That's been going for some time now, actually, and I went to the last one, which traditionally Reboot is in April of each year, but during the pandemic, obviously, it was cancelled and postponed, and then it was supposed to come back in 2022 in April, but then because there were still concerns about the pandemic at that point, they shifted it to something like September, October, so I went to that, and and now we're back on the regular rotation of the April event, and so I've just come back from it this week. So, yeah, that's where I've been, Croatia.
That sounds really excellent. Reboot Develop Blue's website always gets me because of just how beautiful it looks. The whole top half of the page is just a beautiful, beautiful locale. This seaside town, this blue ocean, and these really green forests, and that looks pretty damn inspiring all by itself. But I imagine that the talks there are really the main thing that are inspiring, right?
Yeah, actually, Reboot is sort of in the vein. I'm sure there's similar equivalents in the United States, but the one in Europe, which Reboot is very similar to, is called Develop, and that's held in Brighton around July every year. And it's this kind of slightly smaller, more intimate developer and business development focused event. So unlike GDC, where you have a broad range of all kinds of stuff, along with whatever it is, 40,000 people or however many people go to GDC each year. This is a far smaller scale. So we're talking around 2,000 to 3,000 attendees. And yes, it's held in a Sheraton hotel complex on the shore of the Mediterranean Ocean. So it can actually... you can't see Italy, but you're looking directly west out over the... from Croatia towards Italy, and it's just really nice. I mean, basically, you spend obviously most of your time inside the Sheraton in lecture rooms, but all of the networking events tend to be outside. So all of the outdoor restaurants and cafes, and the location that it's in is actually a small tourist town that's about 20 or 30 minutes from Dubrovnik proper, and it's just really nice. Much like Develop in the UK, You know, when you in between lectures, you can just take a walk on the beach, and you know, you have some lectures are held outside on the poolside of this resort hotel, and yeah, all in all, it's just really, really chill, really nice. I really like this sort of smaller scale of event because, you know, all of the companies are represented, and but because it's smaller, you actually, you know, get the chance to talk to people. It's not like, you know, trying to move through a rush hour train in Japan or anything. And being that you can sort of talk to people, it's really nice because over the 3 days of the event, the actual venue is fairly small. So you tend to run into the same people, you know, every day, which is really great. You know, you just sort of, you get that wonderful sort of event bonding experience where you make new friends and you see old friends, and yeah, what can I say? It's just wonderful. Also, the resort town has excellent, excellent facilities, accommodation, and the restaurants are just top-notch. Croatian wine is fantastic. Much Croatian wine was consumed. also, beer as well. I'm not a huge beer fan, but so I hear the Croatian beers were very nice as well. So, yeah. All in all, it was just wonderful. Next year, Reboot is also happening in April, I believe towards the end of April next year. And I just saw today the initial tentative announcement for speakers for next year. And our beloved friend of the show, Austin Wintery, is featured there as going to be one of the speakers next year. So, yeah, hopefully, if you're listening to this, Austin, I'm very much looking forward to seeing you in Dubrovnik. And if this is your first Reboot, you're absolutely going to love it.
Alex, what was your goal in coming to the conference? And as you look back on the experience and identify the things that were most valuable, did they match your initial goal?
Yeah, absolutely. The goal really was networking, business development for my company, Moon Mode, and also just to see some lectures. The lectures are primarily sort of business focused, so like business development and, you know, indie strategy and things like that. But in there is a sort of a sprinkling of more specific fields like coding lectures, art lectures, design, and of course audio. This time there were only, I think, 4 audio lectures, which is sort of on par with Reboot. So it's not really the kind of event that would be good for you if you are, you know, looking to learn a whole lot. I suppose GDC or even Game Sound Con, obviously, is going to be a better choice if you're looking for learning. So it's primarily business networking and, you know, just meeting other developers, really. And so, yeah, to ask your second question, these objectives were absolutely met. It's just fantastic. I met developers from all over the world. You know, one thing about Reboot, which is quite special, is that because of its location and because it's relatively affordable, being that it's in Croatia, it's extremely international, probably much more international than larger, more popular events like Develop in the UK and GDC. You get all of the Eastern Europe nations, the Western European nations, Scandinavia, UK, and obviously America, Australia, and some places in Asia congregating here because it's fairly affordable. So it's just so wonderful to meet developers from such a diverse range of nations, like places like, let's see, this time Israel and Turkey and even the Ukraine, which was incredible. I had a little chat to a person representing a studio from the Ukraine. Just a little bit of context there that you might, this is totally unrelated to game audio, but it's worth us reflecting on. This developer said that she works for a sort of contracting work for hire studio in Kiev. And out of the 20 people that they have working at the studio, seven of them are women, and the women are able to more easily leave the Ukraine during this wartime and go to neighboring countries. And that's the reason that she was able to come to this event. But the male colleagues aren't able to get across the border so easily probably due to things like military conscription.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And so she said, I said, you know, I'm sorry that to ask you this, but I'm really eager to know, and I'm sure you've had to answer this many times, this event, but is everything all right? How are you managing to work? What can you tell me? She said, it's quite good now because initially they couldn't have stable enough electricity to keep their computers on, and their internet connection obviously was unreliable. But she said, but it's okay because now we bought an electricity generator and we have a satellite internet connection, so we can work again. And I was just feeling very, very humbled and very small in that moment because, you know, I mean, what dedication. I mean, you could say, well, what else are you going to do during a war? I mean, you just sit around and do nothing. Of course, a game development studio is going to want to work. And yeah, just the efforts that this studio has been going to in order to actually keep their business operation going is just incredible. So yeah, it's next time you are complaining about a slow internet connection, just reflect on that. Anyway.
Likewise, it's along the same lines. Game development at the smaller indie level has an element of a leap of faith. You know, you're developing something in hopes that it might attract the notice of a publisher or otherwise, or if nothing else, there's a leap of faith with respect to connecting with a prospective audience. And to maintain that belief in a work of art under those conditions, I think requires extraordinary fortitude of spirit and a kind of relentless idealism.
Indeed. Yes. I think that definitely should be commended for that. There were two people that I met, actually, which I'll just give a little bit of a spoiler alert. These are two people that I met who I'm going to try and see if we can get onto the show, if both of you are okay with it, of course. One person was the director of an Israeli game studio who actually started their life as a heavy metal band. And they decided that they wanted to make a game to go with their album release. So they sort of pivoted and became a game company. Now, that is an incredible story, you have to admit. So I just straight up asked him, like, we would love to have you on the Game Audio Hour if you're interested to come and just talk about your story transitioning from being a heavy metal band into a game company. And he said he would love to join us at some stage. So we'll see if we can line that up. And then the other talk that I went to that was incredibly fascinating, which I'm hoping also to see if we can line up an interview with, was a talk by a woman named Holly Redaway. And she is a professional voice actor and mocap actor director. So she has quite an incredible portfolio of projects that she's worked on, which I won't spoil. And when hopefully if we can get her on the show, she can talk you through that in person. But basically her lecture was on, you know, sort of advice for game audio people who are tasked with directing voice actors or directing mocap actors. And yeah, at Moon Mode, you know, we won't ever, well, who knows, but I doubt we'll have the opportunity to do mocap kind of capture and sort of on-site direction of that. But I thought I'd just go along to this talk anyway, just to see what it was about and to sort of expand my knowledge of this facet of game audio. And wow, it was incredibly fascinating. So I'm hoping that maybe we can get her on the show to talk us and take us through much of what she was discussing in her lecture about, you know, tips for voice actor directors and mocap. Speaking of voice acting and mocap direction, just focusing on voice acting first, have either of you ever had the experience of directing voice actors?
I have on a few occasions. Once for one game, I had the double challenge of voice directing semi, how do I describe these? They were essentially emotional quasi-speech sounds for this game. So I think this might have been a localization tactic that nobody spoke English, but there were sort of these mumbles of various emotional qualities, and that they required that your mouth be closed rather than, you know, open as we would in normal speech. So there was the double challenge of conveying the context and the character and the story and what was going on, and then saying, okay, but you're not actually speaking. You're kind of going to exude the essence of emotion through vocalizations that are not fully articulated. So that was quite an experience.
Mm. Interesting. How about you, Vince? Have you ever had the chance to direct voice actors?
Yeah, I've done a bit, mostly on this series of fighting games that I worked on called Skullgirls. And to be clear, I was not the main director there, but there would be some times where, because of certain things, I would be the one director ostensibly in the studio there, having to direct the voice actor. And that was always fun, you know, trying to do the things the way that they're supposed to be done. Just sort of learning by being thrown into the fire of, this is how one actually gets a really good performance. These are the typical rules and heuristics that you follow during one of these sessions. All those things that I didn't really learn a whole lot about when I was first going into those. I knew them very well as a sound designer and editor. Just, I've got all these assets. What can I do in order to make the most out of these assets? But now I'm sitting way earlier in the process and figuring out, what is it that I actually say in order to get the best performance? Or what is the really important information about this character that they care about so that they can actually deliver what they want to do as an actor and contribute something more to the character than what's currently there? So I was doing a lot of learning on the job, and that was actually really fun. I really enjoy working with voice actors. I haven't done it in a few years, though, but I do miss it, and I look forward to another opportunity down the line to do that. It might happen soon enough, though.
Yeah, for myself, for my part, I've only had, I think, three opportunities to direct a voice actor, but never in the sort of, what would you say, like top-tier venue that Holly works in. You know, it's more in my case, it's more like, you know, you write a big PDF where you discuss this, you know, you explain the situation and the context and the narrative is that if there is one, and then all the information that the actor needs to know about the character, and then assemble some concept art or character art and illustrations so that they get an idea of what they look like and explain the situation. Then you send that off, and then you get some recordings back, and then you say, this one, could you make it a bit more like this? Could you make it a bit more like that? So very, very just skimming the top of skimming the, you know, the surface of this skill, basically, in directing. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that Holly went through in her lecture were just utterly, utterly fascinating about, obviously, from the basic things, like how to care for your actor's voice, through to the very complicated things like how to manage, you know, what the director wants versus the actor's own creativity, how to deal with situations where you've got multiple people recording at the same time, or you've got staggered recordings where you've got one person recording their lines and then another person recording their lines separately on a different date and having them interleaved, and how to get a natural flow out of a situation like that. And also into casting, how to manage the casting of voice actors. Just it's fantastic, because I feel voice acting and working with voice actors and working with voice is a part of game audio that, I don't know, I often sort of tends to be brushed over. You know, when you think of game audio, you think of, you know, composers and music producers and sound effects producers and technical sound designers and audio implementers, and that aspect tends to come to mind first when you think game audio. But then when you think about it, you know, directing voice actors, I mean, that is a huge, massive, and very, very important part of game audio as well, especially on, you know, large narrative games or AAA games and games with a lot of characters and recorded voice. So, yeah, just very fascinating. And hopefully we can see if we can get her on the show for more.
Alex, to go back to something you touched upon, in your own experience in directing voiceover, have you found that it helps for an actor to see the visualization of their character? Have you gotten discernibly different performances before and after, and have they improved?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in my limited experience, knowing what they look like, especially in the case of characters that are, you know, a bit fantastical, is absolutely essential. In fact, I don't really know what would happen if I hadn't have done that, because it just seemed to me as being a very obvious thing that the actor would need to know what their character looks like. But I think that seeing that can inform so many things. You know, what's the degree of humor that's required in this performance? And obviously, if you've got a sort of wacky, cartoony looking stylized character, then that will inform the actor that, okay, I can feel free to exaggerate a bit and kind of ham it up and play around a bit with the expression. Or if it looks obviously, you know, hyper-realistic with an emphasis on authenticity and realism, then the actor might take from that their performance needs to be, you know, more believable and serious and sort of genuine to a human performance rather than exaggerated and cartoonish. And that's all before... entirely before you get to, you know, the very basic things like, am I an alien, or am I huge, or am I tiny, or, you know, am I evil, or am I good, or all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I've never worked with a voice actor where they didn't know what their character looks like. I think that would be very challenging, I imagine, because sure, the actor can have fun and just use their imagination about potentially what they would look like. But you run a huge risk there that doesn't kind of align with the vision that the game artists or creative director or just the game narrative as a whole has in line for that character. Now, what about you, Vince? When you've been working with the Skullgirls project, when you've been briefing the voice actors there, Skullgirls actually might be beneficial if you just gave a quick introduction to the artistic side of Skullgirls, because it is a rather unusual looking game. And that might be interesting for our listeners to hear before, if you can tell us a bit about what the briefing process was like for the Skullgirls voice actors.
Oh, sure. I mean, Skullgirls is a fighting game, a very modern but also old school fighting game, very much inspired by fighting games that came before, back in the 90s and 2000s, but having a very strong and distinct visual style where it is 2D animated, but not animated the way that many people in video games would be familiar with sprites. Instead, it has much more of a cartoon look, because it was animated in a very traditional animated way with a lot of people that are from a traditional animation background, people that went to CalArts doing animation for TV and film and all that, as opposed to for video games, at least in the typical way. So that really informed a lot of the character design for this game, and it wasn't just about the key art of what a character looks like, but how they actually move, that was really key in defining how these characters are in terms of actual character and personality. And honestly, it was a little difficult conveying that to some of the voice actors, especially as we were working on the scripts for these characters and their moveset before the moves have actually been implemented into the game. So, hey, here's a fireball type of move where the character, you know, throws a projectile out there. But how do they actually throw it out there? What does it actually look like in game? And that stuff might not totally work out. There's a lot of character that's missing when you don't see how something is animated. And just seeing a still of what it could look like maybe a month or two in the future, that was actually a little bit tough. And so it was important to do as much as we could with the character based on other things like the backstory. Oh yeah, this character has this type of upbringing, and she's actually kind of haughty and a little bit full of herself. And you know, that's actually perhaps what we can lean on rather than what's actually being presented on the screen for something that is said ostensibly while a particular animation is there on screen.
How many characters in total does Skullgirls have?
Oh, God. This is going to be embarrassing because, so I mean, back when it was first released, and that was probably the most, the toughest time, there were only 8 characters. And Skullgirls actually got some flack for that at the beginning because, you know, a lot of fighting games had come before that, with many more, like dozens and dozens of characters. But Skullgirls started out with 8 characters. But now the game has literally been out for a decade and has been supported by various DLC over the years. So there's quite a few more now. And I think these days it probably doesn't suffer quite as much from what I was just describing, because in creating one of these DLC characters, the team's only working on one or two at a time, versus back in the day where everyone was sort of moving full steam ahead in order to get all of these characters off the ground at the same time one and a half years leading up to our release date, which was very much etched in stone.
Did you ever have the same voice actor voicing the voices of multiple characters?
No, not for main characters. If you were a player character, then you did that one single player character. Later on, there was some story stuff where there would be cutscenes and a full-on story mode where you would have all this story fleshed out and there would be some side characters that were introduced. But for player characters, there was one voice actor or actress for them, and that was it. That was their main gig for the game.
Yeah, it's I mean, it doesn't need to be stated how important good voice acting is for a game, does it? I mean, actually, after the talk at a networking event, I caught up with Holly to, you know, just congratulate her on such a fascinating, interesting lecture, and just to talk a little bit about voice acting in general in games. And we both agreed that. I mean, you could say it about pretty much any aspect of game audio, I guess, but voice acting in particular for a narrative game, you know, it has the power to turn, a sort of passable, mediocre game experience into something extremely engaging and entertaining if the voice acting is really, really good. And also, unfortunately, on the flip side of that, if you have an excellent game but the voice acting is just a little bit lackluster, then that also has the power to, you know, really deaden that experience somewhat. Mike, can you think of a game that you've played in recent memory that has had voice acting that's just really blown you away?
This stretches the definition of recent memory a little bit, but one. Well, I can give you one recent example and one that's more pronounced but less recent. The latter is the original Dragon Age game had some really extraordinary voice performances. And the ones that I remember most strongly are towards the end of the game, where I think Loghain is the dude, the sort of half good, half evil dude, and he's on trial and he's giving his impassioned reasons for resisting the pseudo-French neighboring nation. And the actor conveyed somebody who had kind of a historical beef with this country next door and was impassioned about why what he did was right. And I thought, this is an actor who really understands the motivation of the character and is conveying this information in a very personal way. You really feel like that character has a strong stake in what's going on. It just electrified me. A more recent example, I think, is in Elden Ring, which is sparse in its voiceover performances because the world is more or less abandoned. But on the occasions when they do have characters, you know, they're always meant to be a little creepy and off-putting and yet have some familiar emotions. And the one I remember, sort of 20% through the game, you meet a girl in a shack and she had all her henchmen come along with her, her followers, and they were all assimilated by some horrible, you know, demon-like thing. And she's a little bit out of her head and filled with this almost, how would I describe it, enigmatic mournfulness with a tinge of supernaturalism because nothing that happened to her people makes sense in physical reality. And despite her being this strange alien creature, in a way, emotionally alien, I felt really connected. I felt, yeah, this girl's been through some serious S, and it was very evocative. I think the few performances throughout the game tend to have that kind of quality of being both distance from everyday experience, but emotionally recognizable. How about you two? What are some extraordinary voice performances you remember in recent game experiences?
Vince?
I'm not sure right now. I think I'm kind of struggling because I haven't really played that many story-based games recently. So many of the games that I've been playing off have been these sort of quick pick-up-and-play games where there might be some characters there, but I haven't really followed along with some really big stories lately. But I don't know. What about you, Alex?
I think it would have to be Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk, the voice acting just totally blew me away. I mean, the audio in general in Cyberpunk was just spectacular. But the voice acting, you know, it when you have that kind of, I guess, fantasy sci-fi world, striking that balance between fantasy and believability is quite difficult. You know, if you make it too, what's the right word, too authentic and too natural, then it can come across as rather dull and lifeless. If it's just, you know, too real world, especially in a context like Cyberpunk. And then, of course, on the other side of it, if you make it overacted or exaggerated or campy, then it sort of it doesn't do justice to the seriousness of the world's design. But Cyberpunk managed to find this really excellent middle point between those two extremes where it's believable, but it's also, it has enough, I suppose, character, that is like a flavor, not character like person, but enough flavor to it that that there's no mistaking that, okay, this is the future. You know, it's sort of that also is helped by the dialogue writing, which is intentionally incorporates some rather creative sort of developments in English grammar. Like some of that comes originally from William Gibson's Cyberpunk books, which the way that they speak, they often remove pronouns entirely. So instead of saying that's going to be a problem. Not pronoun, it's what's the word, subject, that's the word. So, you know, you would say that's going to be a problem in Gibson's Cyberpunk and in the video game Cyberpunk. You know, they'll say going to be a problem like that instead of that's going to, so you remove that subject clause from the sentence. So the sort of slightly creative dialogue choices combined with an excellently balanced voice performance where it's not campy but also not not so close to real world speaking, just comes together so perfectly to be a really believable depiction of the future. And then on top of all of that, of course, is the casting, because that's also very, very important to get the right timbre of voice for the characters. And as, of course, is famously known, Keanu Reeves stars in Cyberpunk, and matching together the voice actors together with, you know, a movie actor like that, the direction has just been done so smoothly and excellently and transparently that it just all comes together perfectly. So that's a great example of a game where, much like game audio in general, it's just done so well that you don't really notice. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it fits so perfectly in with what the game looks like that you don't really notice that there's been all of this effort put in behind the scenes to make sure it's all consistent. It just feels completely native. And I just really love it.
All this talk about voice acting is actually reminding me that there is this idea for a talk that I've been wanting to do for a while now. I've done it once while working as a sound design instructor, but I always thought this might be something cool at a place like a GDC or a game sound con. I had actually pitched this in a much earlier form a while back, and I guess they weren't taking at the time. But it comes from this idea of sound that's put out there by Walter Murch way back in the day, of sound being something that is felt or clearly understood. So if it's something that is felt, and he uses the typical idea of music, then that would be hot. And if it is something that is decoded and understood, like words and language, that would be something that is cool. And having a balance of hot and cold in your audio soundscape is beneficial to the overall sound that you're actually delivering in a film. Now, being on that range, that means there's stuff that could be in the middle. And he likes to put this example of sound effects as being something that is both encoded like language as well as embodied and felt like music. Like the sound of a gunshot is the sound of a gunshot and you feel it, but it also says something very clearly. You know, it says danger. It says imminent danger and trouble on the horizon. If it's perhaps sounded with reverb, or maybe it's just a loud bang, extremely dry and loud, and it's actually right there in front of you. And I thought about language. Language itself could also be somewhere in the middle there, where it's not just the words that are decoded, thanks to your ability to understand all the words that are being said and the grammar and the structure and all that, but it's also the sound of it as well. And this goes back to my sort of weird relationship with voice acting through fighting games, because fighting games have this funky relationship between sound effects and language where they have to be balanced with one another. And in many ways, the voiceover is the sound effect and vice versa, where it's like inextricable from each other, such that it's this one thing that actually says this one important thing for game purposes. Like, oh yeah, here comes a fireball your way. But it's also felt, and it's something that it sounds good in and of itself as part of that feeling. So, like the old school Street Fighter II, you know, what is the sound of, you know, Ryu, the main character, throwing a fireball across the screen? You don't really think of the fireball making a whoosh there, and that, but in later versions of Street Fighter, the fireball actually does make this sort of fantasy magic type of whoosh sound as it flies across the screen. The sound effect is actually the voice that Ryu voice actor actually did back in the late 80s, early 90s of Hadouken, you know, and it's that exact same thing all the time, such that it stops being a piece of language or a word that you actually decode into its meaning, you know, Hadoken, you know, wave, motion, fist, whatever. It doesn't matter that it actually means that thing. What actually matters more is the feeling that hits when that voice actually hits your ears rather than the language there. So that kind of got in the way of me when I first started directing voice actors in this specific context as directing voice for fighting games, because it kept getting at me that in that particular genre, voices were as much a felt sound effect as it was a clearly understood bit of monologue or dialogue. But that's also a really hard thing to deliver to a voice actor or actress that is on the clock. Hey, you know, they're at their union rate. They're going to be there for 3 hours, not a minute longer than that. We just need to get through and do all these lines and go through the 20 pages of script that we've got here, right? So let's see, where am I getting with this? It's like, there's a lot of things that I've thought about when it comes to language and sound effects, specifically from where I've come from in terms of my experience, both developing and playing fighting games for a long time.
I think an interesting aspect of what you're describing is that the feltness of language might also be associational. It might be something that the voiceover actor is not aware of because it comes from the deployment of their voice in context. So maybe something, particularly if it's a repeated vocal signal that you get over time. To give a very crude example, I remember in an RTS game I used to play, anytime somebody attacked you, someone would shout like, "We're under attack!" And obviously there's an intellectual meaning to those words, but just as soon as you would hear the recognizable strains of that particular sound asset, there would be an almost Pavlovian response. You know, the time to build my castle walls is over. We're going to get into it now. So that had nothing to do with the semantic meaning of those words. It was just the sheer associational quality of hearing that recording or family of recordings. So I think what you're talking about is very interesting in how language can have an emotional impact apart from the meaning of the words that are being uttered.
In previous versions of this talk that I've tried to pen, I would make a connection between this stuff as well as some Japanese martial arts concepts like kiai and kotodama, where the particular sound that you actually utter in connection with a move or a series of moves that you might do in karate or something, actually has a particular meaning in and of itself for you as the practitioner, or maybe to your opponent if you are actually engaging in a one-on-one sport version like kumite or whatever. And that's interesting, and I find myself going like neck deep in there because there's a lot of stuff in terms of history and philosophy, and it is hard to keep it to, say, a tight 30 or tight 60 when there's just so much out there that I want to dive into to reinforce what could be influencing the relationship between voice and play and voice and other sound effects, because it does also seem like there are different cultures that have a big influence on that. The way that Hollywood has influenced the way that voices in video games, the way that Japanese pop culture from manga and anime has influenced those video games from there, how that actually creates all sorts of trouble when it comes to trying to translate and localize. And then it becomes all these other subjects, and I don't have the time for that either in the 60 minutes at a Game Sound Con lecture or the work that I need to put in before I actually submit to something like Game Sound Con or GDC or whatnot.
Yeah, good luck. It sounds fascinating. I hope that Brian, if you're listening, Vince's talk is going to be good. So bring him on for Game Sound Con.
Ha! Well, we'll see. Have any of you submitted a talk to a GDC or a Game Sound Con?
I did today, yes. Just a very short talk, sort of career advice for newcomers to our field. It's a very, very simple short talk with a simple point to it. And so I think the deadline for submission of talks is just a few days after the recording of this this episode. Yes, fingers crossed, because it'll be really nice to actually go to Game Sound Con. I think I have attended digitally 1 year, but obviously the bulk of those kinds of sessions runs through the night here, and that's obviously not ideal. It would be really wonderful if I was able to make my way over there to visit you both in person. How about you? Are you actually going to submit this idea, Vince, this year?
I don't know. Maybe I should, but also maybe I should save it for submitting to Reboot Develop Blue next year, because I'm pretty sure that is a nicer place to hang out than Burbank for 3-4 days.
Hey, Burbank actually has some nice restaurants.
Yeah, actually, Reboot has two flavors. There's Reboot Develop Blue, which is in Dubrovnik, Croatia, and Reboot Develop Red, which is in Banff in Canada. And the Red is, I think, later on this year. I imagine it's a similar kind of style of event as Reboot Develop Blue. So, maybe there could be an easier, closer alternative.
I don't want closer alternative. I mean, Burbank is in fact the close alternative, and GDC isn't that far either. Mike, have you submitted anything to any conferences?
Years ago, I made a submission to GDC. I think it was about some of my experiences designing a dynamic music system way back before most of the main middleware we use today existed. But sadly, this was not accepted. So these insights remain my own personal nostalgia.
That's too bad. But I honestly really like checking out the way things used to be and the different sort of branches that people have explored, even as audio in games has become more and more unified and the knowledge base is become more and more universal. You know, hey, how do you do audio? We do it by doing this stuff in Unity and doing Fmod API this or Wise API this or Unreal Blueprints and Metasounds this. That covers so much these days. There's something to be said for the variety that was ever present 2 decades ago, which seems like a long time ago, but really wasn't that long ago. The games that we think of from 2 decades ago would still be considered very modern games, not that dissimilar from the stuff that we play now.
Yeah, that's like a whole other discussion topic that's probably not necessarily related to game audio there, but it's something that I actually think about quite often, like video games that age well. if you had to pull one off the top of your head right now, a video game soundtrack or audio implementation that has aged well, meaning that it could be released tomorrow and everybody would be jumping around pulling their hair out about how amazing it sounds, can you do any come to mind?
Two decades ago, like everyone was still doing things with streaming audio. So, you know, as long as it sounds good enough, it is fine. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the things that were interactive, they were struggling with the limitations that are much less limiting these days. Things like memory, whether it be RAM or space on the you know, space on the disc that you are fighting with everyone else for. I've aged well. All of my favorite stuff, I think, doesn't age quite as well as I would like. LucasArts games and their iMuse system driving MIDI is amazing. And unfortunately, that doesn't age well because it's
right.
Because it's MIDI.
Yeah, I think for me, I would say this is a game quite esoteric, and I'm not sure how many of our listeners would remember it, but there was a game on the Commodore Amiga by the Bitmap Brothers called Gods. And it's a side... Do you remember? It's a side-scrolling platformer. I don't know that it was scrolling. I think you sort of go from screen to screen, or maybe it was scrolling, but I forget. Anyway, the music and the sound, implementation-wise, yeah, I mean, it's bare bones, as you would expect from an Amiga game, but the sound effects, the kind of uniqueness of the sound effects, and just their audio quality, I remember as being particularly outstanding. I guess has a whether or not it's aged well, I suppose the ultimate acid test would be to actually dig out the Amiga emulator and try it now to see.
Or go to YouTube.
I guess go to YouTube as well, just to see if it holds up. But yeah, I have a strong memory of the music and the sound from that game as just being sort of an echelon above everything else in terms of quality and the uniqueness of the sound design. So I guess that would be my candidate. What about you, Mike? Do any come to mind?
I think that this is not going deeply into antiquity, but the soundtrack for Skyrim is, I think, a perennial classic. Owing in part to the fact that I think fantasy music being a little more abstract and mythological in nature tends to be more universal and not tied to a particular time and place, so it ages intrinsically better. And since it was a live orchestral recording, the production is not tied to the state of the art of sample technology in 2011. So I think that will age just like one of the great film scores and for similar reasons.
Nice pick. Speaking of picks, there you go. That's a very bad segue. Let's get into conspicuous consumption, shall we? This is the part of the show for those who are listening for the first time where we go around the table and just discuss what we've been consuming recently in terms of anything artistic, games, music, literature, movies, whatever. So what's been your pick for the past 2 weeks, Vince?
Am I going to embarrass myself? Lately, I've been really tired at the end of the day, and I've just been checking out this Netflix animated series called Brown and Friends. And it's a very light 3D animated series featuring these mascot characters from the LINE messaging service doing various silly things. And it's kind of fun. From an audio perspective, probably one of the more notable things about this thing is that it is without dialogue, but there are various bits of emotion and utterances that are not in any particular language by these characters. So, they're happy, they're sad, they're surprised, they'll do all these little utterances in a very, very video game like way, actually, where you might play a video game and a character will be ostensibly saying a large bit of dialogue, but in terms of what you hear, it might just be a single affirmative grunt or character distinctive sort of sound, just to know that this is the character that is saying this thing. It's just a little bit of light entertainment, honestly, after a pretty long day of work. So, yeah, that's it for me in terms of consumption. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, well, last week I was in Croatia, so I wasn't consuming anything except for excellent Croatian wine. and you know, wonderful vistas and seafronts. I don't know that that really counts as conspicuous consumption. Prior to that, nothing new really. I was still playing Death Stranding at that point, and I'm actually tossing up whether to throw in the towel with the old Death Stranding now, or whether to push on. It's been an interesting experience, and wonderful to. Wonderful to find out what all the fuss was about. I'm sort of at the point where I'm not quite sure how much more of it I want to be playing. So that's where I am. But yeah, nothing really new, because I think last episode I was also playing Death Stranding. So unfortunately, mm-hmm. nothing new to report at this stage. And you, Mike?
I've gotten pretty deeply into the TV show Succession, which is a delightfully darkly funny morality tale about scions of a man who founded a media empire and the struggles for power and influence in anticipation of his passing. The music is really memorable. It's neoclassical and often derives from a few elegant themes that seem to evoke the high society that all these characters should belong to, when in fact they are just as petty and conniving as anyone, irrespective of their upbringing. So the music is great and the show is really engrossing. So that's what I've been up to lately.
Excellent.
Neoclassical. That's actually the first thing that I've heard that makes me want to watch this show. I've been hearing people talk about this, and mostly the fact that everyone seems to be generally awful people, and I generally don't like watching TV shows where everyone is an awful person, but neoclassical, I could totally go for that.
Well, as a pianist, a classically trained pianist, I think you'll appreciate the main theme and its many variations. I'll also add, from a story standpoint, even though all the characters are deeply flawed, they're almost always able to capture your sympathy as well. So you never feel like you're trapped with an unpleasant person.
Okay. Well, maybe I should try that. Although I can't help but wonder if I can truly bridge the gap to something like Succession, which is how many seasons now? 3, 4?
I want to say 4. I think we're on the last one now.
Okay, yeah. That seems like it will probably need a lot more of my time than these little 5-10 minute animated things about these animal characters that are doing magical hijinks in a coffee shop.
The white rabbit and the brown bear they're the only ones that I remember from. The businessman with the fish head. That's from Lion, isn't it?
Yes. But it's fun. I like that thing. Sometimes I just need some light entertainment. That's all. Yeah. I'm not going to apologize for it. It is what it is.
Embrace it.
Yes. So that was episode 242 of the Game Audio Hour. If you liked what you heard, feel free to support us by subscribing to us at your podcast purveyor of choice and leaving us a review to keep us in the forefront of the algorithm. You can also follow us on Twitter at Game Audio Hour, where we post notices about future episodes, as well as try to support some other fun and positive voices out there in the Twitterverse. And of course, the easy way to do all of this without having to remember any of what I said is to go to GameAudioHour.com. That's GameAudioHour.com. So go ahead and do that. Well, while I deal with my dog, who is... Did you hear that, by the way? Did you hear him bark? He was whining at me.
Awkward. Probably.
I think it was outside of the cardioid zone, so I didn't really hear anything.
That's what he was whining about. Wrong microphone.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, he's licking me right now. Okay. All right, Copper.